Hello and welcome! It's yet another episode of A Star to Steer Her By, your favorite Star Trek watching podcast.
We're watching about Blade Runner, right?
What?
Please?
What? I didn't hear what you said.
Ames can't even get through a goddamn intro without being interrupted.
Sorry.
I'm sorry, Ames.
I was trying to be funny and I failed. I said we're still talking about Blade Runner, right?
We could. There's supposed to be a series or something, right?
Well,
Actually, there was an animated series, but I've not watched it because it's CG, which means the lip sync is really good, but the version I have access to is
in Japanese.
I'm regretting
this already, damn it.
But the lip sync was done for English, and I can't watch the out of sync lips. It drives me crazy.
Why are you watching it in Japanese instead of English?
Because the English version isn't streaming anywhere, and you can't buy it.
Oh.
Bizarre.
Because Warner Brothers owns the rights to the English dub and won't put it anywhere because David Zaslav should be thrown off a bridge.
Is it really a dub if it's was originally intended to be in English?
The English
really, you're watching the Japanese dub of an English show.
Yeah, like, the thing is, it was like a co-production, and the Japanese made it, so why it was designed for English speech, I do not know. Anyway, Enterprise, unfortunately.
There's probably way more English speakers in the world than Japanese speakers.
Well, yes, but
considering that they're, I mean, I would just say just for marketing's sake, no?
I guess. Anyway.
Wow.
Enterprise.
Anyway, yeah, I thought there was an upcoming Blade Runner series, but Enterprise! Stop it, Chris! Don't do it! Focus on the Enterprise, even though I know you don't wanna. Because we're doing two episodes this week for our show, Star to Steer Her By. As usual, I am Ames.
I am Caitlin.
Jake.
And I was gonna try to think of something funny, but fuck it, this is Chris!
Fuck it, we're plowing through. So this week, we're covering two episodes. They are Chosen Realm and Proving Ground. And it apparently our theme is, it says gullible on the ceiling, and Archer is just way too trusting of people that he really fucking shouldn't be. Typical fucking Archer.
For real, does he ever learn, actually?
Not once. Zero times.
No, and I was going to bring that up, actually, so thank you.
Hooray! So first, let's start talking Chosen Realm. Here's a probably not that quick synopsis because Jesus goddammit, Chosen Realm. We're tooling around another sphere when we're hailed by a ship full of the Trianon, who are a people with half their face black and half their face white. Nope, no, wait, shit. That was Let That Be Your Last Battlefield. I got this. These are the people who are so religious that when Kes gets injured by something, they make Janeway do these mystical rituals that go against her precious science? Nope, crud, that was sacred ground. Okay, wow. Both of which were terrible, by the way. Oofta. Mm. So let's see if this one actually fares any better. Really now, the Trianon, they're this religious cult. They believe that the makers were these people that first built thousands of spheres and we worship them. And T'Pol's like, oh, actually, there are only 59 spheres. And their leader, D'Jamat, is like, thousands of spheres! Don't question me, bitch! We have a quick scene with Indava, the wife of their second-in-command, Yerrick, who goes to Phlox for an abortion, and I'm like, holy shit! This is where Arizonans have to go to get an abortion now.
Space!
Holy shit. Timely.
But then we barely talk with her about this at all, and it becomes a different thing, which they don't really touch upon again, which is strange, but we'll get back to that. But turns out, these Trianons, they want to take over Enterprise, because of course they do. Because they want to use it to battle another religious sect on their planet, and they take over very fucking easily. Because they all have, like, suicide bombs in their blood. And one of them, like, initiates it and takes out a whole section of the ship and causes our second Enterprise crew member death! Hooray!
Yeah, fuck that guy!
And also, it's like, Archer, I feel like it gets brought up, like, so many times. Like, I feel like he won't stop talking. Not that I think that he should stop talking about the loss of his crew member, but it's almost like he knows that we've been saying, like, no one ever dies in this show. And he's like, remember, Star to Steer Her By, I lost a crew member this week.
Make sure we highlight this. And she gave no fucks. She was just like, I wonder what this guy is doing, stabbing himself and exploding. Eh, whatever. I've lived a good life.
You've worked for John Archer.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
haven't.
Have you? Yeah.
So they take over the ship. They entirely bitch every one of the useless fucking Makos. Lock up all non-essential crew. I'm not even sure we ever saw Hoshi. I forget.
I don't think she was in the episode.
Fascinating. And they erase all of T'Pol's precious sphere data that for some reason she didn't back up into the cloud. Idiot. All right, so.
What? God damn it, T'Pol.
Right?
We're out of range.
There's clouds everywhere. Have you seen this nebula? So, for the sin of looking at spheres with non-believer eyes, the Jamaat's punishment is that Archer must choose a crew member to die. And he's like, well, I'll choose myself, and the method of death I want is transporter accident.
Oh my god. As a side note, why not just say, well, you already killed one of my crew. Can't we just count that one?
Oh, that's a good loophole. That's pretty good.
That's some Ferengi shit right there.
Yeah,
I like that.
So for some reason, the Triennans, even though they've read all of like Archer's logs and throws them in his face, they never checked what the transporter actually was. And they're like, yes, death by dematerialization. Go do it. And rather ingeniously, Archer tricks them into letting them just beam him into the cargo bay or wherever he goes and start coordinating a siege with Phlox and kind of sort of Yerrick a little bit, who turns out is on the fence about this holy war thing and bringing a child into this war, can relate. So Phlox very fucking easily creates a neutralizer for the suicide bomb thing and pumps that throughout the ship. And we get just a lot of copy-paste scenes of people fighting, and the Makos kinda help, and the other religious faction turns up, and we're like, hey, stop firing, we've taken back the ship, do you want this Dajamak guy into custody or anything? And they're like, no. Their leader says, no, I've gotta go play a baseball game with Sisko. Bye!
What?!
Yeah, that was Solok!
I thought he was familiar, but I didn't look him up. Amazing.
I'm shocked you didn't look him up. Yeah, it was fun to see him. And then, oh boy, oh god damn it. Oh, fuck this. It could have been good. But yeah. Then we pull this fucking ending straight out of Let That Be Your Last Battlefield when we showed Dajamat that their stupid war, which fucking table flip, was only being fought because they believe the Makers built the spheres in 9 days, and this other sect believes they built it in 10 days. What a goofy shenanigan, entirely undercutting the fucking point of the show.
Yep.
So their stupid war has destroyed their planet, and we're like, no, my home, the fucking end.
Yeah, I feel like the cause of the rift was...
Didn't need it.
Yeah, either didn't need it, or at least, like, I get that you're trying to make the point that, like, often religious schisms are over really stupid things, but this was so stupid as to be borderline comical.
It was a joke. It should have been a joke.
It feels like you're, like, angry high schooler who's just grown out of religion, you know? Like, not a serious thought, but an angry teenager's thought. And yeah, the end straight out of Last Battlefield, basically.
Exactly.
Aside from that, you know, it was interesting because I noticed that Manny Coto wrote this one.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you can see how the sort of the tension between how he interprets the show versus how the producers do. Because like you said, Ames, he does have, I keep forgetting the villain's name because I just want to call him Dajara. But I know that that's that DS9 like caste system thing.
Oh, well, it's a Dajamat.
Dajamat? Jesus. But like where he's like, yeah, so you like tortured a guy.
Yeah.
And John's like, yeah, but mine is different.
Mine, it's like, I didn't hurt anybody. You fucking were going to space that guy.
Yeah. And it's like, I feel like, you know, again, Coto gets that. Actually, John, this is still bad. But like, you know, that like Berman is like, yeah, no, see, it is different. And Coto's like, you missed the point, Richard.
Oh, no.
Which was the wing I was going to bring up where John will learn nothing. Because no, he's not going to learn anything. Because a lot of, I think, the point of this episode was like, yeah, John, see where you could very easily wind up, you fucking idiot? But John isn't going to make that connection because he's a fucking idiot.
Yeah, I have very little to say about this episode. It was just... it wasn't particularly offensive bad.
No.
It wasn't good. It wasn't particularly good.
It was fine.
Yeah, it was fine. And it was... And it's, again, just like everything else in Enterprise, it's very much recycled story. They didn't really do anything new with it. I felt like the addition of the, oh, let's shoehorn in the abortion debate for no reason was stupid.
What I actually kind of appreciated about that was it wasn't even a debate. It was just, she wants an abortion, so, yeah.
Well, okay. The debate was that, oh, the religious nuts would frown on it.
Well, no, but they wouldn't, the religious nuts frowned on any...
Yeah, any kind medical, of medicine.
Anything. So they're more like Christian scientists than just like...
Well, I think
That was also horseshit, though.
They only didn't want to be medical scanned because it would have revealed the weapon.
That's what I was about to say.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think they're actually opposed to it. I just think that the reason they didn't want the scan was because we would have seen the bombs.
Oh, god damn them.
But yeah, no, I do like, though, that at the very least, the Starfleet people, were pretty matter-of-fact, like, yeah, well, it's an abortion, what? No big deal.
I don't know. I was angry at Phlox that he told Archer this woman's fucking medical history.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of gross.
But also, Starfleet has a bad history with HIPAA.
And also, he's literally like a Nazi doctor. So
yeah,
like,
true.
I'll give you an abortion, and then I'll do terrible things with the fetus.
So he must have had to scan her for the abortion thing. So did she not have a bomb?
Maybe did she go through with it?
Or did she? I don't know. Maybe
I don't think they got that far.
She maybe only asked about it.
Maybe he just prescribed her some pills and was like, you know, take these in the morning. And
yeah, because that was the first thing he said, like to Archer, I guess, was, oh, I can't go any further with it unless I do medical scans, and they won't let me do medical scans.
Hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, no, the last Battlefield ending was like, oh, I've seen this.
Right.
I always find it funny that people point to Last Battlefield as like this exemplar of sort of Star Trek like political discourse. When you look at it now, it's actually not very good, because it's like both the evil oppressors and the oppressed are given equal blame for the situation. And it's like, I'm sorry, what? At least with this case, it seems like both the main faith and the heretics are just awful people.
Yeah. Well, we never meet the heretics. We only meet the other sect.
Well, we don't know who's the main... Like, this thing, I think they're just both sects. I think they're relatively equal strength.
Yeah.
Just two different... So what it reminded me of, kind of, there's... Are you all familiar with the status quo? With the term, the status quo? I mean, the term?
Oh, yes. Yes,
but
you know.
But there's a proper noun version of the status quo, which refers to, and I think it might be even where we get the generic term status quo, where it's in, in the Middle East, in Jerusalem specifically, there are that's a holy site for many religions, right? So you get the big three, obviously.
Yeah, all the Abrahamic faiths claim.
But then and sort of like the status quo is a reference to like, we're all just going to agree not to kill each other in this place and, like, just don't fuck with shit. So there is a, in Jerusalem, there's a church. I think it's the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know what that is. And it's a Christian church, and there are multiple Christian,
Isn't a sepulchre like a tomb?
Yes, I think so. So I'm guessing it's got something to do with maybe where Jesus was buried. I don't know.
Probably.
So anyway, there's multiple Christian sects that sort of want to, you know, worship at this church, but because they have like minor disagreements about certain things, like they've had to agree. This is the status quo. They've agreed, like, we're not going to change a goddamn thing about this church. To the extent that, like, there was a fist fight, like a brawl broke out between clerics or monks or whatever, because somebody moved a chair that they were sitting in because they were getting sun in their eyes. So they moved the chair to a place that wasn't getting sun in their eyes, and the people in the place, like the other sects, flipped out and were like, you moved a fucking chair! And there was a legit, like, brawl.
Wow.
Dude, that's wild, because you can't tell me that if the chair's been there for centuries that they couldn't just find the spot on the floor that was, like, darker than the rest and put it right back where it belonged.
And it's even to the point where they can't, no one person from one of the sects is allowed to, like, open or close the door. So they hire there's like a Muslim family that's been doing it for centuries. Like it's like the job that's passed down, and the men of this family, their one job is they open and close the door to this church.
What if they're sick one week?
Well, maybe they get a fill in, but none of the Christians that use this church will touch the door because of the status quo. Now, the exemplar of the status quo and how fucking stupid it is at some point in like the 1600s or something, somebody was cleaning windows. We don't even know what they were doing, but they set up a ladder outside to climb up.
I was hoping this would be the ladder story.
To watch the windows or I don't know, whatever they were doing. But they set up a ladder and they didn't take it down when they were done. And because of the status quo, nobody dare move the ladder. The ladder is still there, leaning against this window.
After almost 500
like
fucking
500
years.
Or something. Yeah. So anyway, my point is that this is a Christian church. These are all Christians. They all believe in Christ, but their interpretation, you know, because you have like Catholics that have one way, you have like Eastern Orthodox Catholics, you have whoever else, and their interpretations are slightly different. Your Vatican II is bullshit! You know, whatever. So I feel like that's kind of where they were coming from with you believe the creators did it in 9 days. We believe they did it in 10. Fuck you! So.
It's like taking it to such an extreme that it becomes borderline comical, which feels so out of place in an episode that is otherwise trying to be very serious. Mm. And I guess the problem is this is a case where like reality is that dumb, but maybe you shouldn't have been quite so real, because it feels like one of those things is like, no, really though, they do murder each other over things this idiotic. Because people, at the end of the day, like, again, I'm not stupid. I know that even without religion, people would do things like this. Because even the non-religious get hung up on tradition that is secular. But, like, it's astounding how fucking dumb people are. And the stupid shit they will use as an excuse to try to murder one another. Because, ultimately, we're evolved from monkeys, and monkeys are awful.
Hmm.
But yeah, it is fascinating because it's like, yeah, like the amount of destruction we've wreaked upon ourselves over things genuinely that minor is fucking absurd.
But does it make for a good episode of fucking Star Trek?
Well, I think like, yeah, they should have come up with a different reason.
Or not given us one.
Yeah, because again, we all know. We exist in the world. We know that people go completely apeshit over the dumbest stuff, especially when you dress it in religious trippery.
Yeah, and I think it also kind of ends up downplaying like their belief. Like their belief is the builder of the makers of the spheres will come back one day, and only whichever sect is right will win and be allowed into existence, and everyone else in the entire, what do they call this place? The Chosen Realm.
Chosen Realm.
Fuck them. Very celestial temple of them.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Yeah, and including, like, every other race of non-believers will be effectively destroyed by the Makers when they return. We're entirely forgetting, like, okay, you two sects, yeah, you guys suck, but you're saying, like, every other person, every non-believer in this space is worthless. Worthless trash.
That's pretty typical of religions.
Especially, I mean, again, my experience as someone grew up in the United States is mostly with the Abrahamic faiths, and that is par for the course for, like, far-right versions of most of them, especially, like, you know, you look at evangelical Christianity.
Yeah, you look at why there are missionaries. It's like, oh, but if you're not in our faith, you'll not make it to heaven.
Well, you know, you want to know why the Christian right is so supportive of Israel?
Oh, yeah.
It's because they think that when Christ returns, he's going to, and Christ can only return if there is a Jewish state in Israel.
Yep.
So that's why they support Israel. But they fully believe that when Jesus comes back, and the apocalypse happens, that all those Jews are they're done. They're not getting in. So
like they have to be there now so that they can be destroyed later.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the stupidest. This sounds like a fucking fairy tale.
Yeah, no, like, evangelical Christians are Bond villains with magic. Like, they are very much looking forward to the end of the world, and everything they do is in aid of hastening the end of the world. I don't know if I said this.
Well, I mean, because in their estimation, the end of the world just means that they're all going to heaven.
Yes, yeah. But yeah, no, when I was in high school, I may have said this on the podcast before. I apologize if I did. I've said it to you guys before. I don't remember if it was on tape. But one of my high school teachers, we went to high school with a crazy evangelical. And he let them show us one of their tapes once. I think because he himself was very progressive. So I think his point was like, hey guys, so in case you hadn't heard, here's what these psychos believe. So yeah, it's... And they outright say it in their propaganda to one another. It's really fucking twisted.
Mm-hmm.
They are a deeply sick, sick group of people.
But yeah, I feel like most of the Abrahamic faiths in particular, I don't know about the Jews. They seem pretty cool. But both hardcore Christians and hardcore Muslims are like, yeah, the infidels, we got to get them. They're fucking done.
Know nothing about, because again, it's just how it is in this fucking world. Like, I know very little about Judaism.
But like, generally, the farther right on the spectrum you go in these, there's moderates in all of them, right? Like the people that don't believe that, but certainly the more militant groups believe it.
The real problem is like all the sort of major religions have their moderate and even progressive wings. The problem is the ones that always wind up in power are the fucking psychopaths. Yeah,
they're the loudest ones.
Well, and they're the ones that are willing to take up weapons to see that shit gets done.
Put a bomb in your blood.
Yeah.
And this is, again, I'm not like naive. I know that when you, even if you didn't have religion, we would find other reasons, you know, far right, anything, even if you take out religion, tends to boil down to everyone but my group should be destroyed.
Mm.
You don't actually need the veneer of religion to end up with that. I think it just makes it sometimes easier to convince some people to go along with you.
Well,
but yeah. I think, you know, at the end of the day, even if religion hadn't been a thing, we would have still devolved into various factions that want to destroy one another.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's sort of the you know, like last Battlefield, they used race as their us versus them. This one's using religion, but yeah, it's a tale as old as time. Fuck the other, glory to me.
Yeah. After we destroy ourselves, like who's taking over? Because like the dinosaurs had their shot. Now it's been the monkeys. Who gets the next go? Is the fish? The fish got their turn?
I say the dinosaurs again. We'll get Gegan and his people from...
There we go.
Oh, the episode from Voyager. It's gone.
Distant Origin.
Thank you, Jake.
There we go. Yeah.
Let them come back.
I was going to say the birds, but really, the dinosaurs turned into the birds. So if the birds took over,
that would be a recycle. Yeah, that's the thing. If the dinosaurs did come back and take over, they'd be little fucking bitch birds. Like, it's not cool.
Yeah, I like birds.
Aw, we saw some cool birds. We like birds.
Birds are cool, but they're not badass.
Some birds are badass.
Yeah, like the raptors badass.
Have you seen the double-wattled cassowary? That thing will fuck your family.
There's no fucking mourning doves are not taking over shit.
I like a goofy bird. Give me a patoo any day of the week.
Or that bird that John Oliver, that New Zealand.
Oh, the Pooteki-teki. Yeah. I love that thing.
Yeah. Oh, what's that funny? That's not that funny little non-flying parrot, is it?
No, it's like some
that might be
weird aquatic bird, I think.
Yeah, there's this wonderful little parrot, which sadly I think is quite endangered because it can't fly.
Mm.
And it's not even like some other birds that don't fly that have like, it has what seems they look like they should be functional wings, but they just walk everywhere.
Penguins, they're fucking goofy.
I love them. They're so dumb.
But they're goofs.
I was shocked when I found out that like kiwi are about the size of chickens.
Oh yeah.
Kiwi are big. Oh, you know what's weird? When we were at the zoo last week,
which zoo? We went to so many zoos.
The one with the birds.
Okay.
I was shocked that the puffins are as small as they are.
Oh, they were so little.
I thought they would be bigger.
Yeah.
Like, I always assumed puffins were roughly the like penguin sized, but no, they're much smaller.
It blew my mind when I found out they can fucking fly. Because I just assumed
they're not bitches like penguins.
Well, the thing, I always assumed they were like penguins and swam, but no, I found it because of fucking Star Wars. It's like, oh yeah, we had to make
the porg
because there were all these puffins walking around and flying. And I was like, I'm sorry, they were doing what? Mm. Love a puffin.
They are very cute. Unlike porgs, we're talking about birds. Which are monsters.
Aww.
Okay, so here's one of my questions on my list. So we find a new sphere of like the 59 or so spheres that T'Pol has figured out. And we're like, oh, there's definitely a reason that they're exactly the same. And I wonder what it is. What reason do we think these spheres exist? Because I say porn storage.
Maybe that is the cloud.
Yeah. There it is. Yeah, it's supposed to put her info there. 90%
of the internet is porn, so.
Yeah, maybe the expanse is really just a giant computer.
Ooh, that's interesting.
I genuinely don't remember if we ever get a good answer on this.
I don't think we do.
I feel like
they leave the sphere mystery a mystery, for better or worse.
That's what the season should have just been. Like, I think we already said this, but like, let's just go to this weird part of space that no one else has the chutzpah to.
Yep. See why it's so weird. Save the Vulcan ship.
Yeah. At the same time, it's Enterprise, so even if they did come up with an answer, it would be supremely dissatisfying.
More than likely. Oh, speaking of T'Pol, I got very frustrated with her during the whole siege area. In that she just entirely forgot how neck pinching works.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Didn't think of that.
Like, she tries to grab a guy, and she just wrestles with him, and we're like, T'Pol, what are you trying to do exactly?
That's an excellent question. Oh, and we must bring up, so Hoshi, we don't think was in the episode at all. Poor Mayweather.
I noticed every time he should have had a line. My God, the poor man.
Multiple times, doesn't get... The most he gets is a meaningful glance at T'Pol, who gives him a nod.
I think he does say something at some point.
Yeah.
He did?
But there were many times where it's like...
Was it I, Captain?
Probably.
It was something, it was something innocuous, like, well, here we go, or some weird, you know, I'm piloting the thing. But every time, like, D'Jamat says, like, oh, yes, pilot us to our home planet. And Mayweather looks at him meaningfully... And then looks at T'Pol meaningfully. And T'Pol gives a little nod, like, go ahead. And then he does. And it's like, Jesus Christ, give this man a fucking line.
Yeah. It's at this point, it's intentional. It's got to be.
Like, yeah.
The producers do not like the actor or something.
Is he paid just, by the word? Come on.
Decided that they're not going to let him do anything.
I really hope somewhere there's a blooper reel that is uncovered one day where... He just looks at that alien dude and Anthony Montgomery goes, get fucked, honky.
There were moments that I thought this could have been interesting because the kind of conversations that we get between D'Jamat and Archer about like their faith versus like
of the heart.
Of the Christ damn you. Yeah. It's like whenever they look at like T'Pol's numbers, like you guys are so hung up on numbers when the numbers aren't important. And it's like there's almost an interesting conversation to be had in here. But you guys are failing it utterly. And the quote, I got a great quote from Jammer's reviews that I took down because it was perfect. The problem with Chosen Realm is that it's conceived as a show about ideas, but executed like a show about cliches.
Hey, that is pretty good.
Yeah, that fucking perfect. Sums it up. Bang on.
Yeah. I say the one, to give a compliment taco.
What?
Well, because I'm not going to give a compliment.
It's not a sandwich, but okay.
Because I'm not going to give two compliments.
So it's like an open-faced compliment.
An open-faced compliment sandwich.
it's compliment toast. Yeah,
I did like the transporter subterfuge. I thought that was
cool. It's probably one of the most clever things John has done ever. Full stop.
And I loved the detail of he lets Phlox know that it's him. By saying, don't feed Porthos cheese.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay, I know it's Archer now.
Yep.
That was good. And then we got to see Porthos.
Mm-hmm.
Who's a good popper.
But he didn't get any lines.
Or cheese.
Like Mayweather
got some cheese. He has opposable thumbs. He got his own cheese.
Oh, did you also notice this was directed by Roxanne Dawson?
I did.
Oh, no, I had not.
Not
noticed.
One of her best. But she also does a ton of episodes, evidently.
Yeah.
Well, which means none of them are her best, because what a show.
We liked her in the one with the The ship that fixes the Enterprise, or the station.
No,
that
I know. I was just kidding. That is actually a very good episode.
What is that called?
Is that the best episode?
That's Dead Stop.
Yes, it is. Yeah, wow, yeah. Jake Nick is schooling me on episode titles today.
Yeah, really. Are you guys? Is this like a Freaky Friday situation?
Poop.
No.
All right, Ames, say fisting.
No, never.
Damn it. Nope, not Freaky Friday then.
But you know who actually directed, it turns out, a metric fuck ton of episodes across multiple series was David Livingston.
Oh, yeah. He's one of their mains.
Who brought us.
Oh, joy. Let's talk about Proving Ground. Guys, Shran is back, bitches. Woo! And he's brought his ship, the Kumari, into the Delphic Expanse to find Archer for reasons. Certainly credible reasons, right? Right. So Degra is over doing his Zindi Council thing, and he tells everybody the weapon is ready for testing on some moon. So let's go check it out. Whee! Go Team Zindi! Over on Enterprise, we're tracking this Kima site from Greylick's tracker thing. That's a little wibbly-wobbly. And would you look at that? It's where the Zindi are going to test their weapon when suddenly, oh, gasp! Another fucking anomaly of the week! And it hits us. Wah, wah, help. But look who's so innocently here to help is Shran!
Woo!
And Archer is just desperate enough to put literally all of his trust into this blue-antennaed weirdo. Like a gullible fool, this will go well. And they help us fix the ship, and Shran's Lieutenant Talas is definitely gonna plow Reed, and I'm
oh my God,
here for
yeah.
it. I'm a little happy they didn't, but it was like, these two must fuck. Jesus Christ, get it over with, people.
Yeah.
And there's a very cute, adorable scene in which Shran pretends to be a ship from the Andorian Mining yeah. Consortium. And it's all just so he can get close enough to scan that system where the Zindi are testing the weapon. But now I kind of just want Star Trek Shran. So the weapon test itself apparently failed because of whatever the sabotage in Greylick did, question marks. Though I was honestly impressed and thought, wow, it fucked up that moon pretty good. No one could inhabit that moon. I mean, I'm sure that's good enough. But the Zindi are like, no, we will only be satisfied with 100% destruction. Back to the drawing board, Degra. Okay, later, Shran somehow fucking convinces Archer, the most gullible man in space. God damn him. hey, let's go steal the weapon and put it in the Kumari for storage, you know? Safekeeping. This is a good idea, Archer, I promise. Look how friendly we are.
Right. Oh, I was going to say, you could put in mothballs next to that, fuck, what was that ship?
Oh, the Suliban ship?
Yeah.
Well, Archer decides, yeah, this is a great idea, I'm coming with. And they go and they very easily steal the fucking thing. And mm-hmm. Shran is having a huge sad because he has to put his little friendship club in peril. Because, Archer, I hate to break it to you, buddy, but we're taking this thing back to Andoria to use on Vulcans. Sorry, bro. But enjoy the Andorian ale. Toodles. Meanwhile, Reed, despite watching Talos's ass the whole time they were working, also spotted her sabotaging the Enterprise a little bit. So he's able to fix whatever thing she did, and they're able to go follow the Kumari, and Archer is so mad that his friendship club broke up, son of a bitch, that he remotely somehow turns on the weapon and Shran has to drop it to not blow up his ship, and everyone's upset about this. Friendship over. The end.
Yeah.
Except...
pretty much.
Oh, the info? I was... Yeah. Let's explain this info. This is the very last scene when... T'Pol probably, or somebody, is like, oh, look, we found this subspace thing that looks like background noise, but is actually the specs for the weapon.
Yep.
Did Shran and or Talas or whoever...
Definitely Shran.
...send that to Archer on purpose, or did T'Pol just intercept what was already going to Andoria?
Shran sent it to them.
Okay, I did not understand
that. Because here's the thing, right? So Shran was doing his duty by stealing the device, but you could tell in his conversation with his superior that he really...
he loves
was
Archer.
...was not... yeah, he really didn't want to.
They're so
it.
Cute.
Like, I think he sees more value in an alliance with humanity than this one thing against the Vulcans.
I think it's just that he likes Archer specifically.
That too.
I think that too. But I do think that, like, Shran is... through the multiple episodes that we've seen with him, his opinion on the whole Vulcan conflict has somewhat evolved. So I think it's as much knowing Archer as it is knowing T'Pol.
Yeah.
That has sort of influenced him. It's like, yeah, maybe our war with the Vulcans isn't worth blowing up a potential alliance with the humans.
Yeah. I mean, these crazy fuckers went into the expanse with, like, the worst possible level of preparation. They are crazy in a way I think is amazing, says Shran.
But here's the thing. So Earth is currently allied, I guess, or whatever you would call it, with Vulcan. I think they should break up with Vulcan and get into it's complicated with the Andorians. Because the Andorians seem much cooler than the Vulcans.
They are great. We don't see them a ton, but this series definitely, you know, takes like a fucking one or two off character species from TOS that we saw not even for real once in TNG and makes them super fun.
Yeah.
It did take them a while to get here, I think. Because I think our first couple Andorian appearances, they felt very bland.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Except for that one rapey one that we frankly never saw.
Oh, fuck that guy. But Susie Plaxton was great. We loved her.
Yeah, yeah, Susie Plaxton was great. We didn't even see them, but in Twilight, it's mentioned that Shran hooked them up with some weapons and shields and stuff. So they're good. They're good friends.
There was one thing that I wish they hadn't done the intro the way they did. Because, you know, starting with Shran on his ship and it's like obvious what's going on.
Oh, so it could be a surprise when they show up.
Oh, that's good. Especially the way they reveal it with the antennae. Yeah.
I love that shot.
Oh, that shot when
they pop up.
When they had a total eclipse of the...
Of the arch.
Of the Shran.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, that is such a good shot, but it's kind of like, well, yeah, I know what's coming because of the intro. I mean, it's still great, but it would have been better if it was just like, who is it? Boop! And you're like, oh, fuck!
I think I agree with that. The teaser scene we didn't need, because then you also know already that they're definitely nefarious.
Yeah.
Because there's no fucking reason for them to be in the Delphic Expanse.
No. No. But aside from that, you know, again, it was just, and that's on the script, not the director.
Oh, hey. Go ahead, Caitlin. You go first.
Well, I was going to say something that I think maybe does reflect on the director. Did anybody else notice that T'Pol changes costume like 3 times in this episode?
Well, a couple times.
She's
in the blue at some point, right?
Yeah, she was in the blue. She started in her maroon, and then she was in this like purple 70s disco jumpsuit looking thing.
Oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, and that was my favorite. But like, I've never seen her change clothes so much.
Well, now that she's not in uniform, they have to show it.
I think it was because Shran said she looked comely and she wanted to be like, oh yeah, you like that? Get a look at this. What do you think about this one?
Huh? Or she's like, oh, you like me in this one? Maybe you won't like me in this one. Stop.
Are we shipping Shran into T'Pol?
No, but why not? I mean, fan fiction probably is coming at some point, and
I do
like writing porn sometimes.
Shipping Shran with anyone but Archer feels like heresy.
But Archer doesn't deserve Shran.
He doesn't, but that is all Shran wants.
Archer just deserves, honestly, to get killed by his stupidity so that somebody fucking competent takes over the Enterprise and they don't consistently get fucking suckered in by, oh, help, oh no. Like, Archer would fall for that fucking Silence of the Lambs shit.
I will say, it was good to see, like, Trip developing in this episode a little.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's still mad at whoever specifically ordered the attack, but he's clearly not just, like, blindly angry at all Zindi now.
Yeah,
like,
I loved his scene with Shran. That was a great scene.
Like, he, unlike John, is growing as a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, and we also get a little taste of Shran in that the two of them kind of have a common ground that they find, like, they both lost people to different things. Shran's, like, older sibling entered some war and was stuck on the front lines, and they're like, oh, I'm sorry, Shran, you lost some family.
Well, it's awesome that Trip is having all this development, you know? I can't wait to see how his happily ever after goes.
So, something I want to mention. So, Shran, it's a point, and it's been done in multiple episodes, and it continues in this one. And it's sort of a character trait that Shran refers to humans as pinkskins.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Racist.
Well, not just racist in like...
Oh, every kind of racist.
But like the fact that not all humans...
Is he calling Mayweather a pinkskin?
Yeah. So like...
It removes, you're right, that's interesting.
It's kind of icky that the writers went this way.
Right, it's like how the idea of flesh tone, meaning like a flesh tone, a crayon has always been like, or not always.
I'm surprised they haven't had a scene where he goes up to Mayweather and is like, ah, so what species are you? You know, like, ugh, Jesus Christ.
I actually was just thinking that. Like, I wonder if Wei Yun thinks they're not the same species. Wei Yun, Jesus Christ. Shran. Shran thinks they're not the same
species. Well, the other thing, too, is that, like, if you look around the Alpha Quadrant species, the vast majority of them
have been played by Jeffrey Combs. Exactly.
Have been played by humans with human skin tones.
Yeah, with a variety of human skin tones.
With a variety of human skin tones. But, like,
Vision.
The fact that Shran specifically calls humans pink skins because he met Archer first, humans.
The show was written by white people, you understand.
Well, no, I get that. But my point is that, like, does he just call every species that has human-like skin tones pink skins? Like, does he call Bolians blue skins? Like, what?
If he met O'Brien, would he call him potato skins?
Delicious.
TGI Fridays would.
I could go for some potato skins.
So it's interesting. There's actually an historic precedence for something like this, sort of, in that the reason we refer to Greece and the Greeks as Greeks, whereas they call themselves, I believe, the Hellenes or Helen, I'm probably mispronouncing it, and it's Hellas over there, is because...
That's hella racist.
The first group of what we now call Greeks that the Romans encountered were the Graeci. And so from there on out, anytime the Romans met somebody who spoke the language and had the culture, more or less, of the Graeci, they're like, oh, you're Graeci.
Was the Graeci like a specific type of Greek?
It was just it was a specific, like... group of Greeks, because like, you know, there were the,
maybe like a New Englander or something for America.
Like how we think of, like, you know, the Athenians and the Spartans and but they were all Hellenes or Greeks now from in English. So the Graeci just happened, and it's funny because I think aside from that we'd maybe have no idea who they were, because I don't think they were a major culture there, but because they're the first ones the Romans ran into, from there on out, you know, it's like they'd meet them like, Graeci. And it's like, what? No, we're the Athenians. See, Graeci. Fucking fine, whatever. But yeah, and that thing is Shran, of course, the first two humans he meets are Archer and Trip. So it must be kind of confusing later. He's like, wait a minute. What am I going to say now? Like, I need a racist term, damn it. And I settle on pink skins. Also, must be kind of weird for Andorians, because it's like, you know, you're all blue. Sort of.
Shade of blue.
Yeah. So it's like, it must blow their minds. Like, wait, some species are more than one color. This is freaky.
Like kittens.
Well, except the fact that, like, again, because the vast majority of aliens we see in Star Trek are played by humans in the vast array of human skin tones, there's dark skinned Vulcans that we have seen many times.
Dark skinned Romulans.
I wonder. See, that would be interesting, because I don't think we ever see an Andorian played by an actor with dark skin. And I wonder what they would do with the
makeup treatment.
Or if they would just paint them blue, the same blue tone that they paint everybody else.
Huh.
Are you just picturing that they're like a darker blue?
Well, I don't know. Like, would they have variation in the skin tone to signify that?
As I imagine, to get that sort of powder blue they always use, you'd have to probably do something a little different.
Maybe.
Because of just the natural skin tone of the actor does.
Well, yeah, they would probably just layer white under it.
Maybe.
Or something.
Hmm. But
something
anyway,
more neutralizing.
It's just an interesting thought.
Yeah.
I also thought whatever the fuck Shran was wearing looked like garbage bags. But then you see Talis, who looks fucking hot in her little outfit.
She has tailored garbage bags.
Tailored garbage bags.
Tailored tit bags.
I was going to say, it sounded like you were saying she had tits. And she does. Yep.
I was getting big, like, big vibes of that time. I don't remember the episode. Maybe one of you will. But when O'Brien is working with that Cardassian woman, and she's, like, flirting with him via
Destiny, I
conflict
think.
Or whatever. Whatever the, yeah.
Possibly. Right.
Because, what did you say, Ames? Which episode do you think it is?
I was going to say Destiny.
Oh, no.
Maybe. But either way, the time she thought that animosity was flirting.
Yeah, yeah. With our good Cardassian friend. We liked her.
Well, she wanted to mate.
Yeah.
You've been nagging me all day.
Mm. Yeah, so speaking of Talis and the, so, you know, we were joking about shipping her and Reed, but here's the thing. She was playing him like a fiddle.
Oh, yeah.
He was enamored of her, but yeah. I don't think she gave him two thoughts. She was just like, I'm going to gain this guy's trust so that he'll let me play with his computer and then I can sabotage it later.
I don't know. I thought the little line.
Right.
So I can kill off his WoW character.
Yeah, I thought the little line where when he was like, well, if you ever, you know, get tired of being a fucking soldier all the time, I think you'd do great on something like the Enterprise. And she was like, yeah, and if you decide to, you know, man up and kill some people, you could do great on an Andorian ship. I kind of thought that was cute.
That's how I know she was full of shit, because that's obviously untrue. Reed's such a little bitch.
Aw.
I don't know. I think
he loves weapons.
I think a lot of it was still on act, but I think maybe by the end she did have a little bit of genuine affection for him. Not like fuck him affection, but...
I kind of wondered maybe. If she sent the message that gave them the information because of her fondness for Reed, but it definitely
I've
makes
seen
more
that
sense
argument
that...
made, which is why I got confused at the end. Like, wait a minute, that wasn't just by accident?
Who sent this? Yeah, it makes more sense for it. I almost called him fucking Wayun again. It makes more sense for it to have been Shran, but I could see her doing it. It wasn't even him, actually. It was the coffee, really. She should probably turn around and go find Janeway in 100 years or so.
I liked when he was, you know, Shran, it turns out, good actor. Because Andorian Mining Consortium Shran is a very different guy.
Mm. That was very... I did enjoy that scene a lot. And it felt very Kirky.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, you've seen Archer try to pretend to be not Archer, and it doesn't work. But Shran is just like, I believe this guy's a weird miner fellow.
Jeffrey Combs would have been such a better actor to cast as the captain, as Archer.
But then he wouldn't have been Shran.
And you would have
Archer,
to have...
And Archer still would have been the same doof, because it's not like they would have written the episodes any differently, necessarily.
Hard to say.
Yeah, then you could have had Tony Todd as Shran, and then we'd actually see a dark-skinned Andorian.
And get to just see more Tony Todd, which I'm always
and
a fan of.
And more Tony Todd.
Are you trying to segue smoothly into our blogtivity, Jake?
No, I'm not. Actually, but I do...
Old Jake.
Old Jake and Kern.
Kern, yeah.
And he played a Hirogen in Voyager, too.
Yes, that's right. Worf's brother who gets mind-wiped.
Oh, okay, that's what I thought. Wait, that's the same dude?
Yeah.
Holy shit, have we talked about this before?
Probably.
Wow, yeah. My mind is blown
anew. He's like
anew.
One of my favorite Star Trek... guest actors, and my mom appeared in a movie that he was in or
no
something.
Shit.
Yeah, we gotta track that down.
It's on her IMDb profile anyway. Oh, I have something I forgot to mention on the first episode that I want to get out there because it was bothering me.
Do it.
You could feel free to cut this into the episode earlier if you want, Chris. But so Archer's transporter trick, it's very convenient and it's very lucky that that fucking whatever his name wasn't like, no, actually we have prescribed methods of execution in our religion, so we have to kill you, you know, beheading or something, you know?
Yeah.
And then also one of the things that he says, and I know he knew he was bullshitting, but he says, T'Pol will make a fine captain, or like T'Pol is more than capable. He obviously has not seen Twilight.
No, he hasn't, because it's been unwritten.
I know, yeah. But man.
I thought the same thing, but...
I thought T'Pol did a fine job in Twilight, and it was all the circumstance.
Yeah, no, I think
I mean,
the writers
Earth
just
got destroyed.
Yeah, so clearly...
He didn't do a great job.
If the difference is Archer does something significant in an upcoming episode that T'Pol would never think of... We'll see. If this is, if it's something that, you know, we can't gauge what the difference would have been, whatever, it's fine. Anyway, tangent aside?
Yep.
Tangent aside.
Actually, you know what it is? T'Pol never would have trusted Shran at all, and so never would have gotten the secret data sent at the very end, like in this episode.
Oh, there you go.
It all hinges on Shran loving Archer for some reason.
Actually, Shran would have found out that Archer had died and just turned around.
Yeah.
He's going to have gone home.
Well, in Twilight, Archer didn't die. He just didn't have memories.
Well, yeah, yeah. That Archer was incapacitated.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Was anyone else, like, utterly, utterly distracted by the constant antenna movement on the Andorians?
Yeah. Shran had just a shitload this time.
Too much.
And I feel like we hadn't seen this much, like, excessive movement since the first episode. Like, wasn't it the first episode they were in where it was just, like, all over the fucking place? Like, the antennae were doing the Macarena. We were just trying to have a conversation. I thought that the last couple times it had been a little bit more under control. But, yeah, Ames, I noticed the same thing, and I'm glad that it wasn't just
me. So, actually, maybe, I don't know if anybody knows this. Are the antenna added in post?
Nope. They are a live remote-controlled effect.
That's why they have the big foreheads. I know that because Ames said so.
Well, but here's the thing. There was a bit where Shran is in, I think, Archer's office or something.
Oh, and he goes under a beam.
And he goes under a beam, and the antenna very quickly moves away from the beam so it doesn't, you know, hit the beam.
Huh.
And I was wondering if it's like, did they have to add that in post because his head got too close to the beam for the antenna?
I think that's just a very
skilled puppeteer.
Yeah, I think it was definitely intentional. And if it was, if it wasn't added in post, then because I know like Jeffrey Combs and the remote controller of the antennae like met and had discussions of like what the different movements are going to be at any given time and how he's going to act, knowing that his antenna are doing certain things. And I watched specifically for that, and I found absolutely no rationality for what the antenna are doing at any given time.
But also, like, why would they try to have him take the cues off his antennae and not the other way around?
Well, I think it would be kind of like it was a conversation.
Yeah, it was like a collaborative effort.
Okay. Maybe
Combs was like, "Hey, I'm gonna walk dangerously close to this beam, and you gotta yank it right at the right time."
Hot.
I mean, I'll admit, I did not notice it this time, but. I gotta say, though, it must be a pain as an actor, because, like, I imagine they can hear the servos.
Oh, gosh.
So, like, you're trying to have a line, and you just hear...
That's interesting.
I mean,
we'll have to get Jeffrey Combs on so he can tell us.
Is it, like, servo-driven, or is it, like, is there, like cable-driven? Like...
Oh.
Like a bike brake cable.
I mean, imagine if it's remote control, it has to be... servos.
Well, you just have the remote going down the actor's the back of their clothes and out their pant leg, and then the cable goes somewhere else.
Or they could have the like mechanism with like the they could have the mechanism like further down, and it is a cable doing the pulling, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I just think that having an electronic device would be a big fucking hassle. Like if I was filming this, having an electronic device that had to be remote controlled would be a bigger pain in the ass than just having a cable-driven puppet.
Hell, I think it's a bigger pain in the ass than having them just be static, because I do find them so fucking distracting.
Hmm.
Yeah, but like I said, I feel like they had kind of, like, settled into a sweet spot, you know, before. Like, the two, what is it? We've seen him Shran four times now, I think.
Sounds right.
I feel like the second and third visits, it was less distracting. But I also wonder if maybe part of it is, like, because we saw a bunch of Andorians, too?
Maybe.
Like, were there more Andorians and therefore more antennae waving?
I don't know.
Watching Shran.
Yeah, they definitely did more with Shrans in this episode than I think I've noticed before.
Yeah, I imagine only the Andorians who have, like, speaking lines and are ever on the screen only have moving antennae. Because I think Talus had it, too. But other, like, background Andorians, they just have, like, dingly boppers that do nothing.
Mm. Yeah, I think having
only halfway through this season? I just realized this is episode 12 of the season.
Listen, Jake, you can have eight episode seasons, or you can have 300 episode seasons like Enterprise. You can't have anything in between.
I mean, I think I'd agree that finding a compromise sweet spot, like Caitlin said, of movement is good, because, you know, like, it is better than having to just be completely static, because then it does just feel kind of like a cheesy 60s alien like they were.
Yeah, like they started out as.
This at least allows them to feel a little more modern.
Going back to their roots.
I can't remember if they move at all in the Paramount Plus series, like the Andorians and the Einar. Do their Deedly Bobs move, or?
Which Paramount Plus series?
Well, we've seen a couple of Andorians, and of course we have Hammer the Einar.
Hammer. Oh, I love Hammer.
That's a good point. I don't remember if their antenna move.
Yeah, like I know it makes sense in Prodigy because they're planning from the word go, like where they move with CGI.
Yeah.
But when it's live,
There's an Andorian in that. I guess what that means, though, is if the streaming Andorian antenna do move, they do it in a way that isn't distracting since we can't remember.
Yeah, whenever we watch, I'll definitely have to keep an eye out.
Yeah.
All right, here's a small thing that whenever it happened twice this episode, and it always pisses me off. So they go and they're doing a thing, and just out of the blue, Archer makes a reference that no one else around him is going to understand, and they all say, "What?" just so he can explain it. And he does this when there's like, "Oh, they're doing this proving ground thing," and he's like, "Ah, Bikini Atoll," and Shren and T'Pol are like, "What the fuck are you talking? What are these words you just made with your face?" And he's like, let me explain the Bikini Atoll to you. And I'm like, fuck you, Archer. You could have worded that in a way that made fucking sense. And it happens in media all over the place, and it pisses me off. Because then he does it later again when the test doesn't go as they expected. And, you know, he's only with Shran probably at this moment. And he says, Greylick. And Shran's like, what are these words you're fucking saying at all times?
I will say, though, like, that second one is more justified because that is an in-universe thing that actually, like, he's like that. Him saying that is more natural. It's like, yes, of course, this guy I know did this thing. And he's just kind of talking to him. He's kind of thinking out loud.
Mm.
So, like, and there's no other way to explain that, really. It's like, this thing you weren't here for happened. Whereas specifically bringing up this historic Earth thing is just thoughtless. Like, the Greylick thing was like an event that has no other explanation. He could have just said this is a proving ground, like fucking T'Pol did.
Yeah, or even if you're going to bring up a specific reference to a thing, don't just state the thing.
Yeah.
Have a complete fucking sentence. Because the person that you are conversing with needs context.
Yeah, like, you know, you feel like in other series you'd have that. It's like, back on Earth, there was this place called Bikini Atoll where they tested nuclear weapons.
Back on Earth, there was a place called Bikini Bottom, where SpongeBob SquarePants lived.
Yeah, well, I don't know why it bothers me, but it does.
I believe it was a kumquat under the sea.
Ah, yes, yes, as legend tells.
That is actually thought to be the reason it's Bikini Bottom, though, is that it's actually...
Oh, they're all like mutants.
Oh my god, holy shit, that's brilliant.
What the... This is a children's show.
Yeah.
Yeah, but have you ever watched it? Because damn, it's fucked up, some of it.
Doesn't explain Sandy the squirrel.
No,
though.
No, not at all. And I don't know if that's like...
Well, she sounds southern. Maybe she's from one of those like... maybe she's from where they did some of the nuclear testing in the desert. No, squirrels don't live in the desert. I don't know.
Well, she's also from Texas, and that was all New Mexico. I also don't know if that's something the creator ever confirmed. It's like a fan theory, I think.
Well, I like it.
One more little Archer thing I'm going to piss on. Because like in the previous episode... Phlox apparently just tells Archer the lady's medical history without her consent. Yeah. And in this episode, apparently Archer told Shran about Trip's sister.
Yeah.
And it's like, why are you guys constantly telling personal information to strangers?
Listen, Shran and John were cuddling in bed, having a little pillow talk. And
let me
like,
tell you about Trip's sister
dying. I'll
tell you
a secret if you tell me a secret. And Archer's like, okay, Trip's sister died. And he's like, okay, your turn. And Shran's like, I love you. And then boops him on the nose.
I mean, they definitely got shitted on the Andorian ale. So I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like, Archer's like, let me tell you how fucked up the Zidji are. You know, Trip, the fucking southern guy? His sister was minding her own fucking business. She was in Florida, which is America's penis, by the way. And it got zapped by the fucking Zindi. Fuck.
They
fuck those guys.
They circumcised our penis.
give me a minute.
Well, you've broken him. That was the best drunk ever.
And then Tran's
ever.
Like, that's fucked up, man. Fuck!
Oh, drunk Archer. Drarcher.
I hate all of them.
Tran. They wake up and they've got tattoos of each other's face on their ass or something.
Oh, never tattoo. Go with the face.
No, Archer just has a tattoo around his butthole that says property of Shran.
I hate you, Jake. I really don't like you.
Love that. Thank you. I mean, I liked it. Shran's, it says like Shran's bussy.
I mean, I'm just going to rip off the show, Archer. They've each got each other's names on their shoulder because they know each one's got the other one's back.
Oh, the wee baby Seamus.
Yep.
Gross.
The wee baby Shran-ness.
Anywho's.
Other Proving Ground thoughts?
It was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Right. It kind of moved the Zindi plot a little further.
We got to see the council continue to be so dysfunctional.
But I thought that I did get a good look at it this time, and I did think the practicals were really good. Some of the costuming is super good. Makeup and stuff.
Oh, yeah. On the Zindi Council?
Yeah.
I still think that the whale Zindi and the bug Zindi stick out as being...
Well, of course they do. It was early CGI. Yeah.
Specifically, I said the practicals.
But honestly...
Yeah, so the practicals did look good.
One of them was giving me kind of like the dad from the dinosaurs vibes, though.
Mm.
A little bit.
I still think that the... What are they? The lizards?
The reptilians?
The reptilians
are totally a ripoff of Ceres from Galaxy
Quest. Yeah, which, you know. But again, though, those CG ones, considering how early it is and the fact that it's a TV budget, 22 years ago, whatever, it's way better than it has any right to be.
Oh, yeah, no, it's good. Oh, and I like that that they bring back up Archer's friend from the sloth.
Oh, Graylick?
Oh, yeah, Graylick, yep.
Yeah, I just like that little touch.
Yeah, I liked him. Who knows what he's up to at this point? Apparently sabotaging shit for fun.
Sabotage.
So,
So Jake brought up Tony Todd earlier.
My name is Jake. Duh. You know who else's name is Jake?
Wow.
Jake's
name is Jake.
Jake from State Farm?
Terrible segue, Jake.
Oh, fuck, I hate those. I hate that so much. It's like, I don't think those ads have been on in like 10 years.
No, they're back.
Oh no. No.
Oh.
Yeah, but nothing's changing worse my than name that fucking again. Limu emu shit.
Oh, God. I hate the Limu emu. I hate Doug.
We've discussed this so many times.
I like the emu. I hate Doug. Fuck Doug.
I hate them all. And I hate the gecko. All these insurance. And I hate Flo. I hate all the insurance things.
How can you hate Flo?
You know, because like, I don't know. She just seems so fucking... I don't know.
I'm not going to lie. I had a big crush on Flo the first time I saw Flo. And then she was on Mad Men and I was like, boing.
Anyway, Jake Sisko.
She was on Mad Men before she was Flo, though, wasn't she?
It was, I think, around the same time. Anyway, Jake Sisko.
Wow.
Yes. So, let's talk about him.
Speaking of things that make me go, no, wait, no, I don't want to make a boner joke. He was young in the beginning. Jesus Christ.
This was actually very easy. For some reason, Jake has been like the easiest one for me to come up with tops and bottoms for.
We have a kinship with him for the naming.
I guess so.
Yeah, you notice because it's your name.
So I'm going to start. So, and some of these are directly related to Nog, which makes sense to my Nog moments because, you know, Nog and Jake kind of go together. So for Nog, one of my top items was that he joined Starfleet and went against Ferengi tradition. I'm going to go with Jake not joining Starfleet and going against human tradition, or at least Sisko family tradition.
But he's a chef?
Can you really call it tradition if it's only like one generation?
Yeah, it's one guy. Well, I don't know. I feel like, you know, like with the Wesley character, there was this expectation that, you know, you're a kid and your dad, your parents are Starfleet, so you're going to be Starfleet. And I think Ben Sisko expected Jake to follow in his footsteps.
Oh, he definitely did. Yeah.
So when Jake's just like, no, I don't want to do Starfleet. I want to become a writer. I think that's great. So good on you, Jake.
There's a great scene in that book that Caitlin got me for Christmas, the Sisko book, of Sisko coming to terms with Jake not wanting to go into Starfleet and likening it to how Joe treated Ben when Ben didn't want to be a chef.
Mm.
And he kind of realizes, I'm going to support my son because it's, you know, his dream is more important. So I get why it was so hard for my dad. I'm having the same situation and always choose support.
Yeah.
And it's very sweet.
So next up, I'm going to say again, one of my bad moments from Nog, and I think Ames had a good moment related to this, was Red Squad. Well, I'm giving Jake credit for knowing right from the off that Red Squad was bad fucking news. Like, he was onto their bullshit immediately. Mm-hmm. And when as Nog was like getting the tattoo done, Jake's like, these guys are kind of fucked up. Maybe we should not go along with their fucking psycho cult of personalities thing going on here.
Is it a property of Red Squad tattoo?
Yes. So
but
good
around
on you, Jake.
His butthole, though, you know.
Damn it.
Yeah, and I also specifically chose, because I think there probably are better Jake moments than some of these, but I also want to make sure we have variety. So hopefully some of the other good moments other people bring up. And then my last good moment for Jake is going to be setting his dad up with Cassidy.
Cute.
God damn it, Jake.
Because yeah, they, Lord knows, Ben Sisko needed to get laid. And
Cassidy's a catch.
And Cassidy is a major catch.
And God knows Cassidy wanted to be a single mother. No, wait, son of a bitch.
Damn it.
Oof. Well, Jake, that's not Jake's fault.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm not blaming Jake. I'm just, it sucks. It just sucks.
You want to go next?
Yeah, sure. Since Jake fucking, well, I'm going to say it and I'm going to get it before the rest of yous do, because I'm surprised that Jake didn't say it. Jake taught Nog to read. And I thought that was great. And honestly, it's just part of the bigger thing, or maybe this is like a subcategory thing, which is that Jake was like really good friends with Ferengi in spite of the fact that everyone was being a fucking stupid racist about them being friends and not seeing any fucking irony about it at all.
Yeah, like I've said before, like the Ferengi, it's okay to be racist against Ferengi in the Federation.
Yeah, teaching Nog to read and being friends with him even in spite of him being Ferengi, good shit. I was also going to say introducing fucking Ben to Cassidy, because not for the getting laid reasons necessarily, just the like seeing that his dad like needed somebody and, you know, see and being able to like tell that they'd be a good match.
Yeah.
Like even if it was something really tenuous, like just like the baseball, you know, the baseball thing, it's like, that's pretty cool. And to try not to retread, I guess, because I had also thought of the Red Squad thing. I think, and I've said this before too, like, the relationship between Ben and Jake is so good, and it's really refreshing and beautiful to see, like, a father-son relationship that's, like, got this, you know, sweetheart, this, you know, calling him sweetie or, you know, honey or whatever, and this, all these things that you don't necessarily associate with, like, masculine relationships. Even though it was, like, a really fucking weird episode and maybe it wasn't gone about in all the right ways, the fact that he like went so far to get his dad that baseball card is like,
yes,
really lovely.
Mm-hmm. I love
Jake's
that
just a
so
really
much.
Sweet kid. He's a good kid.
He's the purest
he's a sweet well,
like,
boy.
Yeah, and like the building on what you just said with the, like every fucking character it seems in Star Trek has daddy issues. Like they're all like it's daddy issues all the way down. And even like characters that didn't specifically have daddy issues, New Trek has given them daddy issues.
Oh,
retroactively.
Gosh.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that we have this like really wholesome father-son and grandfather, like the three of them
have
a really wholesome relationship. And I think it's good.
Yeah. The Sisko family is like the best family. I love them. I know Ben sucks sometimes, but I love Ben too. So anyway, I think that's three things. It might
that
have been
three
and a half things.
How many things does Chris have?
I was trying to find some replacements because a lot of stuff has been said.
We've all said things.
Fuck. Well, I'm not taking off teaching Nog to read because that's fucking.
It's so good.
So good.
And it's so indicative of his character.
Yeah. This one, you know, I'll put this one in just for funsies. In the Jem'Hadar, like, managing to get a runabout running well enough to get like the attention of the rescue team.
Huh.
Because he barely has any experience. It's before Nog has any. Like, this is based on a couple of lessons from Chief O'Brien. They managed to get a runabout going and off planet and barely functional, but just functional enough, which considering he's not an engineer, I'll give that to him. Just to have something a little different. Fuck. I also had Cassidy. Okay, this one is a little out of left field, but fuck it. I mean, he has his reasons, but like, just agreeing to go on his father's crazy fucking this might kill us light ship trip.
Oh, the light ship.
The explorer's thing. I am shocked. So I was holding back my top moment. I am shocked none of you brought it up. Because I was like, I'm not going to say this one because I know other people will mention it. But
let's see if I do. Let's see if I do. Because I've got a couple that haven't been mentioned yet. Let's see. I'll just go in order from the top. The first that hasn't been mentioned yet on my list was when he schools Nog on how the Sembolt thing should work in Progress. Because Nog doesn't understand that land has value, and then Jake's like, let's buy land, and Nog's like, no, we want gold press Latinum, and Jake's like, land is the better idea, we can write it off in your taxes, it'll be great.
Money can be used for goods and services.
I forgot he had to explain land value to Nog.
Well, it's because he lives on a swamp planet, there's no fucking land value in Ferenginar.
That's probably true! Holy shit!
All right, I wonder if my next one is the one Jake might be referring to. And that is related to our Tony Todd discussion, getting his dad out of the subspace void in The Visitor.
That's a bingo.
That's the one?
That's the one.
Yeah, we get old man Jake, like, portrayed so fucking perfectly Tony Todd. And just the love that you see in his face when he realizes how he can save his dad, and it's heartbreaking what he has to do, but he puts his dad first so far that he knows that it's right. And God, that episode, like, I'm going to tear up right now just thinking about it. So
here's the thing, though.
It's not just figuring out how to get him out of the subspace void. It's the fact that he abandoned his career and spent his entire life dedicated to trying to save his father. Like, decades.
Yeah, that's why he doesn't read again.
His hot wife.
Right.
Yeah.
He has to read.
That's why he forgot how to read. Nog had to teach him to read.
It's all come full circle.
All right, I need one more. This one, just because it's sweet and I love it, and, you know, I got spares that may go on the Tumblr, but the last one I'm going to mention is in Hard Time, when O'Brien comes back from his memory jail. God, poor O'Brien. Jake is the one helping him relearn all his things in engineering. Right. And he's such a good boy.
Which is nice because it's like a reversal of when, like, when he's teaching Jake and Jake's like, I'm never going to get this.
Yeah. And he's there being helpful and supportive and, you know, giving O'Brien, like, he's so patient because, you know, O'Brien is struggling to remember things that for him happened fucking 90 years ago or some shit. Yeah. But, you know, was actually O'Brien. Yesterday.
It was 20 years, wasn't it?
Yeah. 20
was it 20? Right. Okay, sure. He aged terribly.
So, I actually was going to bring up The Visitor as a gray mention.
Oh.
Yeah, because he does kind of just get obsessed.
Well, it's like, it all works out. And he does it for you, like, his reasons are totally understandable. But really, Ben wouldn't want him to destroy his own life for him. You know?
Yeah. I don't think Ben would have wanted that, but...
No. But again, it works out, and at the end he figures out how to make it work, but he's lucky he worked it out at the last, you know, within the last few years like he did. So that's why I was like, it's a good thing he does, but so that's why I wanted to put it as thoroughly gray.
I could see that.
But don't worry, fucking great episode, too. I mean, fucking love it. But I think that part of the appeal is the how complicated all of it is.
I'll tell you some things that are uncomplicated.
Before we do that, I wanted to make a correction.
Oh.
Because last week, I said, oh yeah, I'm going to give Jake stink next week for the Sanctuary thing, for getting to the fight with the Screen Boy. Mm. But then I rewatched that episode to grab the screen grab of Nog getting in fight with Korean boys and, mm-hmm. you know, giving them itching cream or whatever he did that was terrible. Stinking cream.
Itching powder or something.
Some stupid thing Nog did that I gave Nog shit for last week and said, oh, I'm going to give Jake shit next week because Jake was there. But Jake was actually being a very good boy.
Yeah, he was trying to de-escalate the situation.
Yeah, he de-escalates and then later he talks with Walter Koenig's kid. I forget the character's name. With a little Koenig in line at the Replimat or something. And they patch things up because Jake is the best guy.
He's better at Starfleet than Starfleet.
But I wanted to make sure I touched on that.
Hmm. All right. Well, I got some bad Jake moments.
Oh, no.
I think the first and biggest one is deliberately turning himself into a hostage of an occupying enemy force.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Staying behind.
No, that was behind. A really good move.
It was so he could do journalism like a little dweeb.
It's exactly the kind of like naive thing that a kid his age would do. Like, oh yeah, I want to become a journalist. So where am I going to get the best journalism in this right now? Would be like behind enemy lines, but without thinking it through
at all.
Well, and also he's like 16. It isn't like he's
years
in the field. He's like literally a child.
Yeah, it's the type of thing that like you could imagine a 16-year-old thinking they're going to be like the greatest fucking author ever and just not. So yeah, I'm giving that top marks. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say falling for and like being seduced by that weird fucking alien in the Moose.
Yeah, I was thinking about the Moose too.
The Moose.
The Moose Boosh.
Moo.
Yeah, that was fucked up. That the was succubus gross. Thing.
Real gross.
And then my other big one is going to be another, like, and again, this is another kid thing or young person thing. I don't know if you're still a kid, but trusting and getting totally enamored of Jennifer mm-hmm. Sisko.
yep.
Oh, but that you can't. I mean,
well, I know, but like again, because he's a kid, right? Like when Ben met
someone who looked just like your mother, who died when
your
you
dead
were.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
but like
I don't think anybody could withstand, and Ben too. I mean,
I know exactly. That's what I was gonna say. Like Ben would have Ben fell for it too, but I think Ben had the wherewithal to be like, oh wait, no, but she's actually from the evil universe, and I probably shouldn't trust her.
Ben actually should have never let them meet. Like,
well, no, but he didn't let them meet.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, she came over.
She came and like engaged Jake.
Well, she's a bad, bad woman.
She was,
and like when Ben saw it, he's like, oh. Fuck.
Yeah, you're right. I was gonna say, like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, when they saw that happening, they should have removed Jake, and
yeah,
Jake also should have known to remove himself a little
bit.
But
at that time, but like, yeah, I mean, I agree. It's not obviously a realistic scenario because, you know, there aren't mirror versions of people, but...
Should have known to remove himself. If someone showed up who, like, looked and sounded just like my dead grandmother, and if they were wearing her perfume... I would fucking give that woman a hug. I even knowing that it wasn't real. I mean, how could you help it? How could you not want to feel that?
No, I agree. I don't blame him. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying, like, we're saying, like, oh, it's a dumb kid thing. Oh, it's a this thing. No, like, it's a human thing. And we long for the people we miss. Like, of course you would. I don't know. I just think I'm not saying it's not bad. I'm just saying that,
I also,
you know,
think
I think we'd
going
all do the
with
same.
Her to the mirror universe was not.
Okay, yes, that's bad.
Getting kidnapped by Mirror Jennifer.
Yeah.
That's a different level.
Now you're victim blaming someone for being kidnapped. What the fuck?
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah, I like how sometimes our worst moments list specifically, because the best moments I think are usually a little clearer. They kind of fall into different categories. Like, these are bad things the character did, but we're glad they did it because it made for a good show.
Yeah.
These are bad things the show did because the writers are hacks. Or these are bad things that happened to the character that they didn't really, you know, have responsibility for. But, you know, it was still a bad moment for them.
Jake, are you going to blame him for being taken over by the Paw Wraith, too? Fucking idiot being a vessel for Paw Wraiths.
Yep. Fucking loser.
Fucking idiot. Nah, I joke. I'm kidding. I really do see your point. I'm not really trying to give you shit. Exploring my own, like, how it would be for me, really, more than anything. So, taking it personally, I guess, is what I'm doing. So, I don't want you to take my taking it personally. Bad Jake Sisko moments. Well, I feel like he's not very tolerant of Nog's needs when he comes back from having his leg blown off.
Hmm.
Like, he's really bitchy about him playing the song a lot, and then he's really bitchy about him, like, being in the holodeck for a long time, and I think I'll summarize it even in a different way, just in general. I think Jake's not a very good roommate. I think Jake is a terrible roommate, and I think he's not, I just think he's not very sensitive to, and I know, like, anyone in that situation, like, might not really know how to deal with it, but I think we all know now that if someone is going through something mentally, like, the best way to deal with it is not to be like, fucking get over it and stop doing the things that bring you comfort, idiot. You know?
Yeah, we don't expect this from Jake, who usually is more empathetic.
Yeah, and, you know, and again, like, if I, well, actually, I was about to say, man, if I had to spend time with someone who listened to the same song for hours on end, and then I realized I am that person, so maybe that's why I'm feeling really sympathetic. Ooh.
The look Chris is giving you
Chris
right now.
Chris is giving, I'm not even looking at him.
The pot calling the kettle black thing.
Yeah, no, I know. I recognize. I'm literally saying that I understand that I'm that person. Stop looking at me.
Yeah, I had that roommate in college, and it's why it took me a very long time to not fucking loathe that Evanescence song, Bring Me to Life.
Oh, no. Bring Me to Life. Oh, God.
So, just like fucking constantly.
I don't, Bring Me to Life, I was more a My Immortal Girl, but Bring Me to Life is all right.
But not like 10 times in a row.
Well, as a side note, common contributor Liz, had a roommate in college who was like even more obsessed with the Phantom of the Opera than I think I am was. I don't know.
How and many cats have been named after it?
No, I don't know if there were any. Oh, well. So here's the thing. Phantom, actually, I didn't name Phantom.
Oh, I
the vet
that.
Named the vet. So I worked at the vet's office. He was brought in as a stray. They named him Phantom while he was back there. And like, well, that's fucking perfect.
I didn't even realize that.
I could have changed his name. I kept his name because it felt sort of like a sign in a way.
I need two more Jake moments.
You know, I was also going to say the Muse thing because I thought that was pretty fucked up. But now let me see if I have two others instead. Oh, my gosh. Well, I thought, and I get why he got mad, because I know that Nog was acting like in a way that was inappropriate. But I feel like the double date thing, like, again, Nog was being atrocious and Jake was, I mean, understandably upset because he ruined the date for both of them. But I also kind of feel like Jake knows Ferengi, and I think he probably knows what Nog's, like, thoughts about women are, and if he expected him to act any other way, that was just, like, maybe naivete on his part.
Mm.
Maybe he should have had a conversation with him ahead of time to be like, FYI, these are not Ferengi women. You cannot tell them to chew your food and talk to them like they are idiots. And if you make me look bad in front of the girl I'm trying to score with, I will be very upset. You already tricked me into this double date. Let me tell you how you're going to behave.
Hmm.
I'm not, again, Nog's, like, behavior obviously is his own. And Jake was, totally in the right to be pissed, because I would have been pissed too. But I also think maybe this was a naive moment on his part.
I like that. I like that phrasing.
And then the fucking idiot got possessed by a paw wraith. Are you fucking kidding me?
That little fucking bitch.
I don't know. I don't have a lot of good ones. I guess the thing that I keep thinking of, which I know, again, it's really not his fault. Like, it's arguably as much not his fault as the Pare thing is not his fault. But, like, when he like, falls in love with Kira because of, like, Waxana having her horny fever and, like, spreading it to everybody. Like, it was just obnoxious. And, again, not his fault. Not at all his fault. Not really. But
the writer's fault.
It was rough and uncomfortable, and I just would have expected Jake Sisko to be more smooth.
Yeah, that one's high on my list too, and the rationality is, yes, sure, it was happening to everybody, but the one with Jake was the one that made me feel disgusted. Like, it just felt really gross.
Well, it's because he was like 17 and she was like his dad's second in command.
So this segues nicely into my list.
Oh.
Mine are actually have all already been said, but I will give, like, slightly different sort of, like, I'll tweak them a little.
Oh, you think it was pretty lame that he gave into the paw wraiths too, huh?
I love
Jake
it.
Clearly has a thing for older women, which is fine when you're an adult, but when you're a teenager, stay away from adult women, because if they are going to reciprocate your feelings, they are a predator. Because we've got Onaya and the Muse. I completely forgot about his Dabo girlfriend, who is like
Marta.
Almost 20 when he's
16.
And it's like, Jake, buddy, she is legally an adult and you are not. She should not be looking at you.
We don't know what the age of majority is in space.
Still, it's weird, like for a human. And like, had I remembered this earlier, I probably would have put letting him keep dating her on Ben's bad list, because she's an adult. Ben, your son is 16. If he wants to look her up when he's 20 and she's 25, okay.
Well, this is tough for me too, though, because like, I'm not saying that it was okay because he was a piece of shit and it wasn't really cool. But when I was 15, I was dating a 19-year-old.
Yeah, and again, like, I'm not so much blaming, but like, an adult should have stepped in.
Frankly. I just think that that happens more often than you would think, and it doesn't mean that it's okay, but I also think that it's sort of like when a guy is dating an older girl, like it gets a pass because like, oh, like women aren't like just horny and whatever. And it's like, no, actually they totally are. Like teachers who fuck their students are just horny and gross. And like, that's not okay. But I just think that.
But yeah, Jake's.
That's tough. But yeah, you're right. I mean, of course you're right.
Sense of self-preservation and caution goes out the window when an older woman is around. And like, yeah. When I was younger, I definitely had a crush on, like, a student teacher once. I didn't try to do anything about it, because I wasn't an idiot.
Well, but you have to also understand that to some extent, maybe this might be a mother thing, too, a little bit.
Again, though, like, he's not... He's a smart kid, but it goes out the window. So when an older woman's around and giving him the eye.
He's a young man who's full of hormones dreams and shit. Well, I'm just saying, you can't blame him. Blame the show.
It's a bottom.
All right.
Again, yeah, not a great roommate, especially when they first get together in the ascent. Like, Jake, you don't even have to do dishes in the future. You put them in the replicator and they vanish. Like, come on, man. I'm a lazy fuck. But if I could do that, like, I would be so good at housekeeping.
Yeah, I also remember in that
all of my shit would be in the replicator.
Yeah, I also remember in that episode, like, Nog leaves to go be on duty or something and comes back only hours later.
Yeah.
And Jake must have changed clothes 15 times because the place is coated in clothing.
Yeah, like, he must have Tasmanian deviled. Like, the place is so fucked up so quickly. It's like, Jake, Jesus! And like, yeah, Nog had his own issues in that episode, but we're not talking about Nog. And in a slight variation on Jake's thing of him staying on the station during the Dominion occupation period.
I know what you're going to say.
Actually thinking Wei-Yun would like let him be a journalist.
I
had
that. What I thought. That was good.
Like, come on, dude. Like, Wei-Yun's even like, really, kid?
What were especially you when he's, well, he's legitimately... writing biased stories, and it's like, dude, that's, you're not gonna get him through. Also, you shouldn't be biased if you're a journalist.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Dominion bad, but you really think the Dominion's gonna let you say that?
And do you think it's a coincidence that Dominion is a news organization now or whatever?
Oh my god, they are.
Jake is their contributing editor.
I'm just saying, the changelings are already here, and even if it's only four of them, imagine what chaos they could unleash.
What are yours, Ames?
Okay, well, all of my good ones have been said, so I'm going to give you some little ones because, like, Jake is generally just so good in all sorts that some of these are very nitpicky. So here they are; they're hilarious.
I definitely had a hard time coming up with bad ones for him too.
Yeah, like there were the obvious ones of, you know, the Muse woman being disgusting. Fucking exploding clothing in the ascent, all those kinds of things.
Tarif.
So these little ones are just like little dumb things. I was like, Jake, really, you're above this. And the first thing I'm going to say is in Valiant, the way that he gets onto that ship with Nog is he has weaseled into Nog's trip so that he can try to get an exclusive interview with the Negus.
That's right.
Because he thinks, oh yes, as long as I just tag along, I can use this and quarter the fucking leader of the Ferengi. Presumptuous much, Jake? Yikes. Yeah. What a weird guy.
Well, he's seen Zek palling around on Deep Space Nine. Maybe it didn't seem so impossible.
Mm.
All right, this one's another like gray area E1. So I think the point of it is being in the situation in the first place. Mm-hmm. In that when Ben's brain is very fucked up in Rapture and he's having visions all over the place, but it's going to kill him. Somehow the decision of do we operate on Sisko or not falls to Jake. And he does the thing that Ben would not want him doing, which is do the operation so my dad survives. When really the answer should have been call Joe, make Joe do it.
Well, or even like, I feel like Sisko kind of made his wishes clear. So though arguably he wasn't in sound mind. Still
they're like DNR like situations where like he knew this was what his dad wanted. He doesn't do it for like selfish ish reasons, but also reasons that are like best for everyone else that isn't Sisko.
Yeah.
The Sisko situation is ridiculous. But also, like, he was, what, 16 years old and given this decision to make?
Yeah, they should have called
you
Joe.
You should not be in that decision.
He's lucky that they were in a post-scarcity society, or if he'd have fucking pulled the plug on him so he could get the inheritance early.
Oh, God.
All the baseballs are his.
Woo!
Hey. And the last little one is just a little one I want to mention. Just because I forget what episode is even in. I'll have to look it up. But he clearly doesn't know how to spell Julian Bashir's name. Because in another episode after Once More Under the Breach, Julian tells him, oh, get my name spelled right this time. And I was like, Jake, do you not know how to spell the CMO's name? Come on, guy.
He apparently doesn't know how to spell. Like, when I was looking him up.
It's the future.
Yeah.
Spell check.
It should spell check for him.
I Google words all the time.
But oh, yes, ditto.
You know, so, and they say that that's like kind of fucking up the way our memory works, having access to stuff like that. So yeah. I'm sure once someone has had access to that information their whole life, no one will know how to spell shit.
But yeah, no, it's kind of a running gag with him, it turns out. Because like, when I was looking him up for this, yeah, there's Julian's name. There's, I guess, when they were first roommates and Nog read one of his stories, he just went through and corrected the spelling and grammar.
Right.
Oh, yeah, and he got mad. Jake got big mad about it.
The stuff he wrote in the Muse, Sisko read it. It was like, it's good. Spelling needs some work, though.
That's interesting.
There's this running gag of like...
Maybe he has dyslexia.
Maybe. Well, it's also maybe just one of those things. He's not careful on the first draft. And
then submits
exactly.
It.
Well, and especially with handwritten. I mean, when had he ever used a fucking pen even before, really?
Yeah. You know? But yeah, it's just kind of this thing that I never noticed before, but there's kind of a running gag that Jake's spelling is a little shitty.
That's interesting.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Good for them being consistent, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Unlike some Star Trek writers we know.
Oh, unlike, say, all of Enterprise.
So, next week we are going on...
Oh no, more Enterprise.
Enterprise with Stratagem and Harbinger. So look forward to that, I guess.
We'll see.
Follow us on your favorite podcasting application. Hopefully those of you that were previously using Google Podcasts have found a replacement. Follow us on the Facebook and the Tumblr, sshbpodcast.com, where you will see this and other lists and other articles Ames has written and our fan fictions. And other
Those are
type
my favorites.
Things. And next week's character spotlight is plain simple Garrick, who's never anything right. I mean, wrong. I mean,
who's done everything.
Well,
yeah.
Can we just have six things that we like about Garrick and talk about the fact that every single one of them is good and bad? Because
that's brilliant.
He is so complicated. Like
the best list and the worst list will be the same.
Yeah. Like honestly, though, you know,
like
he's,
the things
he's
we love about
tough.
Him are objectively bad things.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Oh, wait.
So yeah, look forward to that.
Hey, what episode was this, by the way? What number?
Oh fuck. 348. Woo!
Oh, belated. I didn't say it. Shit.
You didn't, but I didn't want to interrupt you while you were trying to intro on like some people.
I think we got lost in fucking Blade Runner for no reasons.
We did. I'm sorry.
Blade yeah, is this you guys punishing me?
I think like, also
for missing that episode.
The man.
Listen, we had a great conversation with Liz.
We did.
I can't wait to listen to it. Thanks, Liz. Thanks for taking the fucking bullet, because I did not want to do that shit.
I also think, when I was looking at our list the other day, this is actually, when you include all the other things we've done, our 400th episode.
Happy wow. total 400.
Yeah.
Damn.
So join us next week for 349/401. This has been Chris.
This, oh.
Whoa. This has been Ames.
This has been Caitlin.
And this is always me, Jake.
But which
from Jake? State Farm.
Negus Jake. Jake, Grand, my boy.
Grand Negus Jake. Acting Greg Negus.
'Cause,
what are you doing back there?
Jim was climbing the curtains.
He's a very feisty boy. He does this during my meetings all the time.
Oh, they must love it, though.
They love meetings. It's their favorite. Yeah.